Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Today, we're diving into a book that really pushed boundaries, didn't it? Alliston Burroughs, Running with Scissors.
Oh, absolutely. Published back in 2002, it's this darkly comedic, almost surreal memoir about a childhood that's, well, hard to believe is real.
Exactly. Augustine Burroughs, born Christopher Robeson in 1965, tells the story of his adolescence, which was unconventional, to say the least.
And it's significant because it wasn't just a shocking story. It kind of blew the doors open on discussing childhood trauma, mental illness, and what normal even means. It resonated with so many people.
Yeah, that raw honesty mixed with this biting humor, it really struck a chord.
Mm-hmm.
And it forces you to think about survival, resilience, and the power of telling your own truth, no matter how bizarre.
Which is incredibly relevant today, you know, understanding how people cope with and make sense of extreme circumstances.
So let's get into his story, his journey. It starts in the 1970s, right? A seemingly middle-class life in Massachusetts.
Seemingly being the key word. His father, Norman, was an alcoholic philosophy professor, often absent emotionally, if not physically.
And his mother, Deirdre, an aspiring poet, was struggling with severe mental illness. We're talking paranoid delusions, manic episodes.
Yeah, the book describes her thinking the house was bugged, receiving messages through the cat. It created this baseline of chaos, constant turmoil hidden behind a normal-looking facade.
How does a kid even cope with that?
Well, Burroughs developed these incredible, almost hyper-aware survival skills. Intense observation, trying to predict the unpredictable.
And that dark humor starts early, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As a shield.
Definitely. A way to distance himself, maybe, to process the absurdity without being completely overwhelmed. He desperately craved stability, normalcy, but it just wasn't there.
Then things take an even sharper turn. His parents' marriage falls apart.
Right. And his mother starts seeing this psychiatrist, Dr. Rudolph Turcotte, who Burroughs calls Dr. Finch in the book.
And Finch's methods were, let's just say, highly unorthodox.
Unorthodox, unethical, dangerous. And this leads to what Burroughs calls the great abandonment. His mother legally signs custody of 13-year-old Augustine over to Dr. Finch.
Just hands him over.
Exactly. It's shocking. Any semblance of a normal childhood just evaporates. He's suddenly living in the Finch household, which he describes as a kind of professionally sanctioned madhouse.
So his education essentially stops.
Formal schooling, yes. Yeah. Finch actually encouraged him to drop out of eighth grade. His real education became navigating this incredibly dysfunctional environment.
Living with Finch, his family, the timid wife Agnes, the daughters Hope and Natalie, and other patients.
Yeah, a rotating cast. People with various delusions living right there alongside the family. Boundaries were non-existent.
The book details some truly bizarre things, like analyzing stool samples in the masturbatorium or the casual access to medications.
It illustrates a complete breakdown of professional ethics, of care, of basic human dignity. It's shocking, but it paints a picture of this chaotic reality he was immersed in.
And during this time, he had his first significant relationship with Neil Bookman.
Right. A 33-year-old patient also living there. Augustine was still a teenager. It was complex. Part affection, part mutual desperation, but also statutory rape, all sort of quietly condoned by Finch.
It provided some kind of intimacy, I suppose, in a place utterly starved of genuine connection, but incredibly damaging.
Deeply damaging. It shaped his understanding of relationships in profound ways, mixing connection with exploitation. That realization came later, but the experience itself was part of this warped education.
But he lives like this for years, from 13 to 17. How does he get out? What's the turning point?
Well, he holds on to hope for a long time. Hope his mother will get better. Hope someone will rescue him. But there's this moment he describes seeing his mother completely absorbed in her own world, her poetry, Dr. Finch.
And he realizes she's not just a victim, but sort of a willing participant.
Yeah.
And that he's not her priority.
Exactly. It's a brutal epiphany. The fantasy of being saved dies right there. And he understands, maybe for the first time, that if he wants out, he has to save himself.
That must have been devastating, but also maybe empowering.
A catalyst, definitely. It shifts him from just enduring to actively planning an escape. He decides to get his GED.
And at 17, he does it. He leaves the Finch house.
A remarkable act of self-determination, really, considering everything. He moves to New York City.
And gets into advertising, surprisingly.
Maybe not so surprising, though. Think about it. Those survival skills, reading people, understanding hidden motivations, seeing through facades, They're actually incredibly useful in advertising.
Huh. That's a really interesting point. His education in dysfunction gave him insight into human psychology.
Precisely. He had a knack for cutting through the noise and finding what truly motivates people. It led to a successful career.
And eventually, he starts writing, initially just for himself.
As therapy, yeah. Processing everything he'd been through. He wasn't planning to publish the most personal stuff.
But the story was just too powerful to stay private.
Right. It got noticed, published as Running with Scissors, and it just exploded. Made him a literary name overnight, but also brought scrutiny.
And we'll touch on the controversy later. But his later work, like Dry, continues exploring the aftermath, right? Addiction, the ongoing impact of trauma.
Yes, showing that healing isn't neat. It's a lifelong process. His willingness to keep sharing that messy reality is part of his legacy.
So let's try to synthesize his core philosophy, the worldview that emerges from all this, what really drove him.
Well, first and foremost, I think, is this radical commitment to truth, even ugly, uncomfortable truth. He seems to believe it's always better than comforting lies or illusions.
Which makes sense, given how much delusion and denial he grew up around.
Absolutely. And then there's this deep understanding of human adaptability, how people can find humor, find ways to cope, even in the most horrific situation, like his own use of humor.
He also seems to conclude that normalcy is kind of fake, or at least very negotiable.
Yeah, that societal conventions are pretty arbitrary. His life was proof that you could live so far outside the norm and still somehow function, survive, even create.
And a deep suspicion of authority figures, especially in helping professions.
Understandably so.
Yeah.
He saw the potential for abuse of power firsthand with Dr. Finch, so yeah, healthy skepticism there.
What about his motivations? What kept him going?
Despite everything, I think there was always this underlying search for authentic human connection, maybe because it was so lacking early on.
And transforming pain into purpose.
Yeah.
Using his writing.
Definitely. Taking these traumatic experiences and turning them into art, into something that could potentially help others feel less alone, that commitment to truth-telling becomes a driving force.
How did he approach adversity itself? We talked about the dark humor.
Yeah, the humor is key. It's a coping mechanism. Keeps the trauma from becoming totally overwhelming for him and the reader. There's also a kind of radical acceptance looking back and seeing what experiences taught him, even the terrible ones.
Maintaining agency, in a way.
Right. And a strategic adaptation. Learning how to navigate the bizarre rules of the Finch House, playing along sometimes, while observing, judging, planning his escape internally.
Okay, let's talk about three pivotal moments that really changed the trajectory of his life. We've touched on them, but let's focus. The first has to be the handover, right?
Without a doubt, age 13. His mother legally transfers custody to Dr. Finch. This isn't just a change of address, it's a fundamental severing.
It shatters any hope of a normal adolescence.
Yeah.
And plunges him headfirst into that chaotic, unethical environment. It dictates the next 4 years of his life.
Completely. It's the ultimate abandonment, setting the stage for everything that follows in the Finch House, the neglect, the bizarre experiences, the problematic relationship. It defined his teenage reality.
Okay, pivotal moment number two.
I'd say that moment of realization about his mother. Seeing her absorbed in her own world with Dr. Finch and understanding she wasn't going to save him, that he wasn't her focus.
Why was that so transformative?
Because it killed the fantasy of rescue. It forced him to confront the reality that his survival depended entirely on himself. It was painful, yes, but it was the necessary spark for him to start thinking about escape, about self-reliance.
It shifted him from victim to potential agent of his own future.
Exactly. It's the death of one kind of hope, but the birth of another, the hope he could build his own life.
And the third turning point.
The decision to actually leave at 17, getting the GED, packing his bags, and walking away from the Finch household.
It sounds simple, but after years in that environment.
It was a massive act of courage and self-creation. It was him consciously choosing to reject the chaos, reject the definition of reality imposed on him, and step into the unknown to build something different.
It's the moment he transitions from survivor to author of his own story.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the culmination of that internal shift that began with the realization about his mother. It's him taking control.
So, reflecting on all this, what are the big human lessons here? What does his life teach us, things a listener today can relate to?
Well, one huge lesson is about resilience. Specifically, that it's often forged when you realize no one else is coming to save you. That strength comes from facing the need to save yourself.
It's not about not needing help, but about finding agency when help isn't available.
Precisely. Another lesson is the power of humor as resistance. Finding the absurd in the darkness isn't denying the pain. It's a way to retain your humanity, to keep from being crushed by it.
Like using wit to keep perspective.
Exactly. And then there's the big one. You have to define your own normal. When the external world's version fails you or is actively harmful, creating your own definition of a meaningful life becomes crucial.
It's an act of self-creation.
Totally. And finally, that healing isn't a straight line. His later struggles show that recovery from deep trauma is ongoing. There are setbacks, and that's part of the process, not a failure.
These feel very relevant today with more open discussion about mental health and trauma.
Definitely. His story provides a kind of language, a validation for people who've felt outside the norm or dealt with hidden struggles. It also shows, professionally, how unconventional backgrounds can be a source of unique strength.
That advertising insight again?
Right. And the power of authenticity. His raw, honest story resonated because it was real. Even the uncomfortable parts. Vulnerability created connection.
Okay, let's boil this down. If you had to give three final takeaways from our deep dive today, what would they be? Start with an emotional insight.
Emotionally, I think the most powerful lesson is that survival itself can be transformed into purpose. He didn't just endure the trauma. He metabolized it into storytelling that connects with others on a deeply human level, offering solace and understanding. The pain wasn't wasted.
Okay, an intellectual insight.
Intellectually, it's the profound challenge his story poses to the concept of objective truth in memoir, and maybe even in life. His experience, the controversy, it forces us to grapple with the subjective nature of memory and how personal narrative shapes our understanding of reality. What is truth when experiences are so extreme and contested?
That's a big one. And finally, a universal, practical insight.
Universally, it's the validation that you have the right and perhaps even the necessity to define your own normal. You don't have to fit into pre-existing boxes, especially if those boxes are damaging. Building an authentic life, even from chaotic beginnings, is possible through self-awareness, courage, and yes, sometimes even dark humor.
Find your truth, define your normal, and own your story. Powerful stuff.
Indeed. It's a story that stays with you.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.